A one-minute video and a digital ad campaign launched yesterday for Governor Scott Walker. It's the clearest signal yet that Walker will seek re-election. An official announcement is expected soon, as we learned from his campaign. Meanwhile, the race is filling out with at least 8 Democrats indicating they'll enter the race hoping to win the August 2018 primary and compete in the November 2018 general election. Mordecai Lee is a professor of urban planning at UW-Milwaukee. He's a former state lawmaker, perhaps has a crystal ball. Mordecai, welcome back to the show.
Oh, thanks very much for inviting me. Good morning.
Well, what was your takeaway from Governor Walker's ad?
Well, it's so interesting that nowadays there's a kind of a political striptease as people shift from being an incumbent holding office to being the candidate. In the good old days of a mere, let's say, 15, 20 years ago, you announced that you were running for re-election, and that was it.
Plain and simple.
Precisely. And then now it sort of ekes out step by step. But, you know, when you're a politician and there's an opportunity to get some free media, I think what Governor Walker is doing is very shrewd. He's doing it step by step, and for every little thing, he's getting some coverage.
Well, considering that everyone pretty much knew that Governor Walker would run for a third term, how do you think that affected the kind of ad his campaign would put out there?
Well, when you look at the ad, he's trying to cram a lot into a very short ad. Generally speaking, you would expect, as an incumbent, that he's focusing on his record, but then he's quick to say, but there are other things that I want to do. In other words, I'm not resting on my laurels. I do have an agenda. I do have a platform for the future. He, of course, tries to squeeze in a lot of things, a lot of symbols of Wisconsin. And finally, there was what I thought was clipped and edited a little too tightly was he's working at his desk late at night. He's making notes. He turns off his lamp. And then all of a sudden, it's 6 in the morning, and his alarm goes off. Somehow.
That's just the magic of filmmaking, Mordecai. You just have to accept it. let's listen to a clip.
More folks are working than ever before because we're open for business. Our budgets are balanced and we now have surpluses, so we lowered taxes. At the same time, we're investing more into schools than ever before. Test scores and graduation rates are among the best in the nation. More families can afford to send their kids to college because we froze tuition. More people have access to health care here than just about anywhere else in America.
Well, it sounds like a laundry list there. What stands out to you about those accomplishments?
What stands out to me is that everything there is what we used to call lunch pail politics. In other words, the kinds of bread and butter concrete issues that voters would care about, especially voters who are, let's say, in the middle ranks, in the swing independent voter ranks. After all, when he ran for president, he really had sort of come out of the closet in terms of talking publicly about social issues. He talked about abortion. He talked about all the other hot issues that were there. But as governor, he's strictly refrained from ever talking about those hot-button social issues. So what really strikes me about this ad is just the opposite of what he used to be doing and saying as a presidential candidate. He's focusing on the bread-and-butter issues of job creation that has served him well in the past as a candidate for governor.
Oh, so perhaps the safe things that have worked well in the past.
It's like, I have a position on abortion? No, I don't. And so... It's to say, I want to create jobs, I want prosperity, I want to cut taxes. And those are, I guess you'd call them, the non-ideological or non-controversial elements of a standard Republican political philosophy nowadays, where you don't talk about the hot-button issues that get people all riled up, either for or against.
Talking with Mordecai Lee, he's a professor of urban planning at UW-Milwaukee, former state lawmaker. We're talking about the governor's race as Governor Scott Walker's campaign released a one-minute video yesterday hinting ever so slightly, although the hint was pretty big there, that Governor Walker will be running for re-election. How do you feel about this? 800-642-1234. Does Governor Scott Walker deserve a third term in office, or would you like to have someone else in the governor's mansion? How do you feel about the job Walker has done in his second term? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Mordecai, the state Democratic Party put out a statement to say that if the ad were honest, it would include his refusal to expand health care to all Wisconsinites, his rejecting federal money to improve broadband in rural Wisconsin, cuts to public schools, and favoring the rich over the middle class. It would also show him riding his Harley on a crumbling road. Is this a predictable response, or did anything surprise you here from the Democrats?
Well, I think what the Democratic Party is trying to do is it's trying to just sort of keep the communication link open of what the opposition is. Just like Governor Walker's ad is an excellent ad of summarizing his best foot forward, what the Democratic Party was trying to do was summarizing his worst foot forward. In other words, by highlighting issues that they think would have public traction in opposition to him getting reelected. And that really is the role of the party, in particular when there is no presumptive nominee, as there are sort of a baker's dozen of Democratic candidates.
But do Dems have any traction?
You know, we probably need to remember that, generally speaking, in Wisconsin politics, an incumbent has about a 9 out of 10 chances of getting reelected. In other words, it's better to be the incumbent in a race than the challenger. But on the other hand, there are situations in Wisconsin where incumbents do lose. And so, for example, when a Feingold lost re-election to the current U.S. senator, there was an incumbent in a Wisconsin race, a statewide race, who got defeated. This does happen. And so maybe the important thing to focus on is how unpredictable Wisconsin voters are. In other words, nothing is set in stone. Anyone today who says, oh, for sure he's going to get reelected, or oh, for sure he's going to be defeated, they don't understand Wisconsin politics. This is a real race until further notice.
Well, in the latest Marquette University Law School poll, which was 3 months ago, give or take, 48% approved of Walker's job performance and 48% disapproved. 53% also said the state was going in the right direction. In what kind of shape would you say Walker is in as you look at these polls?
Well, he's not in good shape. He's not in excellent shape. In other words, when you're an incumbent, you want to start your race for reelection by cracking the 50s. Ideally, you want to be highly popular like Governor Thompson was. You want to be in the 60s. But to as an indication of Scott Walker's fabulous political skills, whether one agrees with him or not, he does have fabulous political skills. When he dropped out of the race for president and came back to Wisconsin and Marquette started doing some polling, as I recall, he was in the mid-30s. His support had essentially collapsed. The reasons for it can be argued. But what he's done ever since dropping out of the race for president is he's shown how talented he is politically. He's clawed his way back to 48%. That was an enormous accomplishment. And that was something that he did sort of day in, day out, trying to change his standing with the public through various activities. So this is an indication that he's in much better shape than people thought he would be the day after he dropped out of the race for president.
Well, let's dig into that a little further. What makes Scott Walker such a gifted politician?
I think he's a gifted politician because he's very focused. He's very disciplined. He stays on message. He never says something he doesn't plan to say. He never goes off on a tangent. He just sticks to what he wants to say. And so, for example, ever since coming back from dropping out of the race for president, he stopped talking about social issues. He stopped talking about transgender bathrooms or abortions or any of the other issues that were hot on the political trail as a politician, and issues that here in Wisconsin would not necessarily have redoubted to his benefit. And so he just, I guess you'd say, turned off one button, turned off another button. He came back and became, again, the economic development governor, the governor who just talks about things like that. And that's what's really encapsulated in the ad. The ad is the result of essentially a year and a half of going back to his previous image, an image that served him well to get elected in the first place, to survive the recall, and then get elected to a second term.
Well, there's the adage in midterm elections that the party that controls the White House takes a hit, which would suggest that Governor Walker might have a tougher time this go-around than his previous races. Does that hold? Does that hold weight?
I think it might be a truism nationally. It's not necessarily always true about Wisconsin. Wisconsin has a an electorate that's very independent, very unpredictable, that does not feel bound to follow those historical rules. There have been situations where the party of the president's party does well in a Wisconsin off-year election or does poorly. There really is no one generalization we can make. So all things being equal, if you're a candidate running for re-election, you'd hope that the top of your ticket would be popular and would serve you well. In this case, presumably, Donald Trump's position is not one that that a Republican statewide candidate would want, but isn't necessarily fatal.
Slick new one-minute ad with the theme "More to be done" leaves the clear impression that Governor Scott Walker is planning to run for a third term in office. What do you think? 800-642-1234. How do you feel about the job Governor Walker has done in his second term? Does he deserve a third term in office? How does the Foxconn deal factor into your feelings toward 2018? Join us, 800-642-1234. Governor Scott Walker touts his record on creating jobs, on lowering taxes, investing in schools, and increasing health care accessibility. That's in a new one-minute ad released yesterday. It's the clearest sign yet that Walker will run for a third term, and the campaign plans to make it official soon. We're waiting. Walker had $2.4 million in cash on hand as of June 30th. That's after raising $3.5 million during the first half of the year. Mordecai Lee is here to discuss the crowded field. He's a professor of urban planning at UW-Milwaukee and a former state lawmaker. Come into the discussion as well at 800-642-1234. What do you think has been Walker's greatest achievement or failure as governor? What do you make of Walker's call for NFL players to stop protesting the national anthem and instead uniting against domestic violence? 800-642-1234 or post your thoughts on the 2018 governor's race over on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let's go to Nate in Milwaukee. Hi, Nate.
Good morning. Thank you. I don't believe that Scott Walker deserves a third term. I listened to that part of his ad, and my first thought is, oh, this is the lies that he'll run on this time. He ended up cutting education more than he put into it. He was interested in cutting taxes no matter how many holes there were in the state budget, and I think there are some now. And in talking of his past victories, he won the recall by running against the recall itself, which, as somebody from Milwaukee County, it strikes me as very hypocritical. And last but not least, the economic growth he wants to brag about is actually behind the rest of the country, and arguably the rest of the country is dragging Wisconsin up, which means he's taking credit for other people's actual accomplishments.
Mordecai, is Governor Walker's stump more problematic than it looks at first blush, than it looks from this ad?
Well, I really like that Nate is the first caller, because Nate quickly crystallized how a group in the demographic slices of Wisconsin voters feel about Scott Walker. That Scott Walker is a polarizing figure ever since Act 10, and that most Wisconsinites have an opinion about him and even have a strong opinion about him. So that if, hypothetically, if the election were held tomorrow, we already know how, oh, I'd guess 60 to 80% of the voters would vote. But as usual, it's those middle swing voters, that traditional Wisconsin independent, that'll determine the election. And so people from Nate's perspective will be promoting their view. The ad that Governor Walker ran will be promoting a really different package of ideas. And frankly, as somebody who's followed Wisconsin politics ever since I was an undergrad at Madison in the 60s, I think the result is wholly unpredictable.
How will the Foxconn deal impact the governor's race?
Well, I think this is a very undetermined kind of outcome. Presumably, by the time that Scott Walker is running actively and the other candidates are running actively next summer, the deal will have been signed, and perhaps there'll be some initial activity. Presumably, there'll be some details that will come out that some people will interpret positively, some will interpret negatively. But I don't think it's a slam dunk. Generally speaking, I think we should say that for Scott Walker, this was a win. This is something worth bragging about. But details in the long run, whether this will turn out to really be 13,000 jobs, whether those up to 13,000 jobs will really be good jobs, I think remains to be seen. But it probably won't be known before the election. And so he'll be focusing, and the attacks will be focusing on the negotiated documents rather than any particular results.
Nate, thanks for calling in. And Chris now in Green Bay. Go ahead, Chris.
Good morning. Thank you. And you're doing a great job, Keith.
Oh, thank you, Chris. Appreciate it.
So how does Walker's campaign committee justify a surplus given the reduced revenue income through tax cuts and increased borrowing?
This is so great, listening to voters who are very well informed and can really remember things and present facts as they have experienced them. Chris is another example of the demographic of Wisconsinites who have already chosen whose side they're on and who believe that Scott Walker's record is one that is subject to significant criticism and therefore that he should not be reelected. And so Chris also has presented a list of items that may or may not get traction with those swing independent voters. The thing about Wisconsin voters is they're so unpredictable. A person like Nate or a person like Chris, they've made up their minds. But Wisconsin has a long tradition of independent swing voters. In fact, Tommy Thompson's career was built on successfully appealing to them. And so I'm not sure which side will persuade them when it comes to voting in the election.
We don't know who the Democratic challenger is going to be because it's a rather crowded field. Eight of them have announced they're running, while several others are at least thinking about it. Do you see any Democrats here posing a particular serious threat?
Well, I think the correct answer is who knows. and by that, what I mean is that we can't say today for sure that if so-and-so is the nominee of the Democratic Party, then for sure X will happen or for sure Y will happen. Politics is very unpredictable. Sometimes it's a question of luck or timing or external events or the mood of the voters. So it would be hard to say today that so-and-so would definitely be a weak candidate versus so-and-so who'd be a strong candidate. I think one of the advantages of the fact that Wisconsin has moved up its primary, its partisan primary, from September to August, although we moved it up for reasons that have to do with national requirements for military voting, is that then whoever wins that primary has a little bit more time to gather endorsements from his or her opponents, to raise a new pot of money, and to get their campaign going. So I think it will be a real race. An incumbent always has a built-in advantage, but I don't think it's a slam dunk for either the Democrats or the Republicans to start breaking out the champagne right now.
Well, I also want to make mention of public schools superintendent Tony Evers, because the Board of Regents voted on this freedom of expression policy earlier this month, and Evers was the only dissenting vote cast, 16-1. That was a very controversial vote, and might that factor into the equation in Evers' campaign?
You know, I think the correct answer is who knows. And by that, I don't mean to be flip, but I mean, it's very unpredictable what issues get traction with Wisconsin voters and what don't. And we have to be careful to separate what the voters care about versus what the media cares about.
Yeah.
The news media, and without in any way criticizing the news media, finds this to be an interesting story, in part because journalism is based on freedom of expression, freedom of information. And so they focused intently on it, and I think justifiably. But whether this is an issue that will move people to say, well, that's why I'm convinced I'm going to vote, let's say, for so-and-so or against so-and-so, that really remains to be seen. Politics is a little bit like poker. You play the hand you've been dealt, and some of the cards are strong cards and some are weak cards. Maybe the thing to talk about, and perhaps we'll wait after the break, is the fact that if you have, let's say, eight people running in the Democratic primary, you could have the Democratic nominee be the winner having won, 20% of the vote. So it really is unpredictable who will do well and why they do well.
Thanks, Chris, for your call. Let's go to Marion in Sullivan. Hi, Marion.
Yes, good morning. Just a quick comment about Governor Walker's stand with the NFL players. I didn't know about this until just recently, but it doesn't surprise me because he follows whatever Trump is doing. I think it's wrong. I don't think anybody has a right to tell any of us what we can say or how we can demonstrate. And that's not the United States of America. We have freedom of speech and expression.
Well, Governor Walker sent this letter to the NFL on Monday calling players' decisions to sit or kneel during the national anthem a, quote, divisive political sideshow. Instead, he suggested they take a stand against domestic violence, and his letter got national attention. Mordecai, what do you make of his position there?
What I make of it is that it was a very deliberate decision on his part to get involved. After all, there was no, in a sense, obligation by a governor of any state that has an NFL team to jump into the fray to take sides. But the fact that he did was an indication that he thought that this would be a political winner in terms of criticizing the NFL players who are kneeling or sitting. And then he did it, again, showing how skilled politically he is, by pivoting the subject to talk about domestic violence. After all, who's for domestic violence? So I think this is a perfect example of a very shrewd politician who does things when he feels they're worthwhile and really has the discipline not to do things when he doesn't.
Talking about the 2018 governor's race, Governor Scott Walker releasing a 60-second ad yesterday hinting that he will be running for a third term. And we're asking you to weigh in on this third term and what you would expect out of the governor's race in 2018. 800-642-1234. You can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. How do you think Governor Scott Walker has done in the second term? What are you seeing in the field of candidates emerging from the Democrats? Where do you see the election going? 800-642-1234. You can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Mordecai, as I mentioned earlier, Governor Walker has millions of dollars in his coffers for his campaign. What do you make of his money position right now, his financial position for running a campaign?
I'm really glad you're raising this because money is the mother's milk of politics. And we as Wisconsinites, we really would prefer that that not be the case. In other words, we would prefer that all candidates be equal in their abilities to communicate with us, to compete for the election. But when a candidate does have an unusual advantage of money, that is very, very helpful to their chances of success. Now, that doesn't mean that every Wisconsin candidate who's the big spender, the high spender, always wins an election. But it sure is great to have a lot of money. And because of what he did about Act 10, Governor Walker has a national constituency that is willing to continue financing him to continue his political candidacies. And so I think he has essentially a bottomless pit of money, in particular because of the legal outcome of John Doe 2. And I don't know if we have time to talk about
it. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, John Doe 2 essentially meant that an independent spending group can coordinate with a candidate's campaign. And this is something that would have been against the law, but now it's permissible. And so when I say that Governor Walker has a nearly sort of bottomless pit of money to spend, it's not only the money that he's raising, but it's the money that his campaign committee can coordinate for other spending by third parties. And this will be our first statewide campaign where this legal status quo exists, and I think it's going to change everything.
Well, John from Menominee called in, but he couldn't stay with us. He said, the person who is our governor works for us and should appear in public. He says, Governor Walker never has any public appearances. He isolates himself. The public doesn't have access to him. And John says, that's concerning to me. How would you respond to that, Mordecai?
Well, generally speaking, candidates and politicians like controlled situations. And so in that respect, you can't, you can say that, for example, for the Republican members of Congress in Wisconsin who are only holding telephone town hall meetings instead of open town hall meetings, or are doing public appearances only in, let's say, factories and businesses without open access, that it's a way to avoid demonstrators, it's a way to avoid the unpredictable possibility of events. And I think it's fair to say that Governor Walker, generally speaking, in his town hall meetings and in his meetings when he goes to businesses, these have tended to be closed meetings. But I think sooner or later he's going to be shifting to open rallies, and I think we should expect that at open rallies we will see counter-demonstrators.
Let's go to Kevin in Keewaskum. Hi, Kevin. Go ahead.
Hi. Good morning. Yeah, I guess I just don't see a reason that Governor Walker wouldn't get elected. You know, I know a lot of times people still bring up Act 10, but he's won two elections after Act 10. And, you know, people talk about that he didn't bring the jobs in that they were that he said. But, you know, Wisconsin unemployment rate is so low. And I guess I just don't see a smoking gun right now of why, again, that he wouldn't get elected. And I don't see a good Democratic challenger that would challenge him on anything.
Well, I'm so glad that Kevin called, because some of our earlier callers relatively openly indicated that they were opponents of Governor Walker and intended to vote against him. And here we've got Kevin, who's summarizing the economic case of why he's a strong candidate for reelection and may well get reelected on economics. The thing about politics is the unpredictability of the situation. I think Kevin is accurate about what the current state of the economy is, and that people are more likely to vote for an incumbent when they feel good about the economy rather than when they're unhappy about the economy. To raise just a pure hypothetical about the unpredictability of politics, right now the stock market is an all-time high. Let's say hypothetically, and I don't wish this on anybody, especially on my 401k account.
I know where this is going, Mordecai.
let's say hypothetically that the stock market crashed. All of a sudden, the mood of the voters would change. Now, Governor Walker is a very skillful politician, and I'm sure he would figure out a way to address it or to avoid addressing it. But nonetheless, it could change the whole context of the race. But Kevin is right. The economic statistics right now are positive.
Well, earlier this month, former state Democratic Party chairman Matt Flynn became the eighth Democrat to enter the race. And Mordecai, you're a Milwaukee guy and well-versed in state politics. What do you know about Matt Flynn?
Well, Matt Flynn is a very intelligent, articulate, experienced campaigner. He was chairman of the Democratic Party early on. Indeed, there were he ran races and he lost some races. But I think he's very solid on his feet. And without in any way suggesting a criticism of the other Democrats, I think when Scott Walker used the accusation of plagiarism against Mary Burke, I think that was really an arrow to the heart, especially how she responded when she haltingly in public tried to define what plagiarism was or wasn't. I think that all candidates have to expect that Scott Walker is a brilliant tactician and has a great research team and will raise something out of nowhere about whoever wins the primary. So, for example, a Matt Flynn would probably be an articulate person who could handle a surprise accusation. Mm. And in a sense, all candidates need to be able to do that. In her case, she handled it a bit ham-handedly, and I think that really made her vulnerable.
According to a Marquette Law School poll released in July, 48% of voters approve of Governor Scott Walker's job performance. 48% also disapprove. We're discussing the 2018 governor's race after the release yesterday of a 60-second ad proclaiming that Governor Walker may run for a third term. Not officially yet. Mordecai Lee is our guide for the 2018 governor's race and how it's shaping up. You join in as well. 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll be back after this news update. Governor Scott Walker chairs the Republican Governors Association and leads the effort as the party looks to maintain control of 26 governorships in the 2018 midterm elections. Meanwhile, Democrats control 9 seats up in 2018. This as Governor Walker released a 60-second video yesterday, giving a strong indication he'll be running for a third term. At last count, there are 8 Democrats vying for the party's nomination to take on Walker. Mordecai Lee is here to navigate the race. He's a professor of urban planning at UW-Milwaukee and a former state lawmaker. We welcome you into the discussion at 800-642-1234. Does Governor Walker have a clear road into a third term in office? Why or why not? How do you feel his administration has performed in his second term? Join in at 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let's go right to Aaron in Eau Claire. Hi, Aaron.
Good morning. I agree with Mordecai that Scott Walker is the consummate politician, and I would say that he is not a governor. He is a politician that is using his position in the state of Wisconsin as his a next step to his run for presidency. I think about his divide and conquer comment with Diane Hendricks. I think about how he continues to demonize people who might need food share, how he's decimated the UW system. He's not done anything, in my opinion, that's helped Wisconsin move forward.
Let's let Mordecai unpack Aaron's comments there. Mordecai?
Well, generally speaking, all elected officials are politicians. All of them want to win elections. I guess politics is a little bit like high school. Some of us had good experience, some of us had bad experiences, but we all remember the importance of being popular. And so Aaron is correct in pointing out that as a politician, he's successfully rebuilt his support. And as you, Kate, quoted correctly from the Marquette poll, he's at a 48-48 kind of position. Not a desirable position for an incumbent, but not necessarily a guarantee that a politician, a candidate on the ballot would necessarily lose. So it's people like Aaron who remember things, and just about all of your callers have very strong, very accurate memories about how they feel about Governor Walker. And that, I think, is very representative of public opinion in Wisconsin. Almost nobody has no opinion about him.
Well, as Aaron mentioned, the run for governor, Sue from Green Bay, called in, but she couldn't stay with us, and she wanted to pick up on that thread. When Walker was pursuing the presidency, Sue says, Wisconsinites paid for travel expenses. She's wondering if this was paid, if so, how and when?
Well, I think both Aaron and Sue are focusing on the issue, will he run for president again? And I'm sure that during this campaign of him running for re-election, the Democratic candidate will again try to get him to say over and over, are you promising you'll serve out a full term? Are you promising you're not going to run for president in 2 years? And Governor Walker fended that off from Mary Burke last time around. If I'm recalling correctly, Governor Walker, when he reflected on his unsuccessful race for president, had said that holding one office and running for another office was a liability for running for president. And so for people like Aaron and Sue who are thinking about that, it's possible he'll make a commitment that he won't run for president. It's possible he'll leave the door open. There's also a scenario that he'll get reelected and then resign from office in midterm to run full-time for president. There are all these different scenarios. It's very hard to count them or percentage them.
Let's go to Steve in Mount Horeb now. Hi, Steve.
Oh, hi. Good morning.
Morning.
Yes. Well, what about the gerrymandering / cheating for getting elected? And if the Supreme Court rules against Wisconsin's gerrymandering, which they should, how will that change next year?
Well, it is possible that the U.S. Supreme Court will rule that the gerrymandering went over the line in terms of political packing of Democrats to maximize the opportunities for Republican state legislators to keep winning majorities in the Assembly and Senate. But we have to remember, this, as governor, it's a statewide race, and so in that respect, the gerrymandering doesn't affect the race. But on the other end, he was the one who signed it into law, and so that might make it an issue. It's just so unpredictable how events will happen. And, Kate, I'm really glad that all of the callers are mentioning, well, what about this or what if that? I think they're really putting their finger on the fact that at this point, anything can happen.
Steve, thanks so much for calling in. And Mordecai, that's why I said you should bring your crystal ball with you today. Let's go to Chris now in Milford. Hi, Chris.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
I just recently moved to Wisconsin 8 months ago from Connecticut, and it's the Governor Malloy out there, the Democrat. He's in his second term. He decided not to run again after increasing taxes for the second time in 2 years. There's no budget there. I guess you could argue that Wisconsin was the second to the last state to have a budget as well. But I moved here because of the there's a lot more potential for jobs. There's jobs everywhere, from what I can tell, and a better place to live a family. There's a lot of things to do here that was not available in Connecticut for me.
So, Chris, would you vote for Walker if this is his bid for reelection?
If he keeps trying to continue, if he has plans to keep moving Wisconsin the way it's going, absolutely.
Mordecai.
Well, I think that's great that we've got somebody who didn't, who hasn't been in Wisconsin a long time, and especially was not here during the fight over Act 10. And Chris is indicating that he feels that the jobs picture in Wisconsin was better for him in terms of opportunities than it was back in Connecticut where he lived. I think what's going to happen is, in response to the 60-minute ad that you ran, Kate, where he uses economic statistics to his favor, I expect that the Democrats are going to develop a relatively well-polished critique of that, a kind of a yes, but, in terms of, let's say, the pace of job creation this year versus last year, or the drop in unemployment statistics compared to other states. So there's always a case that can be made by the other side. And I'm really not sure which one is going to be the more persuasive.
Mordecai, do you see Act 10 far in the rearview mirror, or do you think voters see the issue over right to work still very pressing and still very emotional?
That's a great question, Kate. And I suspect to a person like Chris who just moved here, it sort of sounds like maybe the dinosaur age in Wisconsin, that it was so long ago and that it was so settled by the recall election. But I think that from some of your callers, some of the early callers who made comments about Act 10 and negative comments about Act 10, I think it's an indication that Act 10 created a really permanent divide by people who had very strong feelings against Scott Walker and people who had very strong feelings for him about Act 10. And so in a sense, that's where the race will start. There's that 48% who like him and presumably supported Act 10, the 48% who don't like him and perhaps are doing it based on Act 10, and that those middle 4% are the ones who are going to decide the election.
Well, Chris, thanks for calling. Welcome to Wisconsin. And let's go now to Joan in Eau Claire. Hi, Joan.
Good morning. Scott Walker has moved Wisconsin in a decidedly right-wing direction. He's very well-funded, and he's very interested in pleasing his very wealthy Republican political donors, which he has done. Scott Walker cut $1.6 billion from K-12 education in 2011. He's taken money away from the UW system, and he's relaxed environmental regulations, not to mention firing at least half of the scientists at the Department of Natural Resources. People don't necessarily want to move to Wisconsin with how he has cut funding to education. Thank you so much for allowing me to speak.
You know, I think that's a really nice balance between Chris, who's saying that he felt that the economics of Wisconsin were more attractive and worth moving here, and Joan giving some very powerful and detailed statistics about why they're not. I also like the fact that Joan highlighted that Scott Walker not only has taken very prominent positions about economics, about job creation, something that one could consider almost non-ideological, that appeals to 99% of the population, but that he's taken positions, let's say, on taxes or on social issues that are relatively divisive and that might appeal to only a slice of the electorate. If the election remains a referendum on the economy, then I presume that's what Governor Walker would want it to be. If the elections start, the campaigns start having traction on these social issues or these ideological issues, then I think it might be a much more contest, much more contested, much more up in the air.
Joan, thanks for the call. And Mordecai, as we begin to wrap up, let's shift gears to the race for lieutenant governor. Former State Representative Mandela Barnes of Milwaukee said yesterday he's strongly considering entering the contest, becoming the first prominent Democrat to show interest in the position. Current Lieutenant Governor Rebecca Clayfish is expected to run for re-election with Governor Walker. What are your thoughts on the Lieutenant Governor's race?
I think there's a real Democratic problem, and by Democratic I mean with a small d, with how we select our lieutenant governors. They run independently in the August primary, and then they're sort of merged with the gubernatorial candidate, and sometimes these are really bad marriages. They're not the ones that fit. I really prefer the model of the U.S. president, where once you become a nominee, you pick your running mate, somebody you have faith in. But nonetheless, these are open races, and we should talk about them. And again, if they become crowded races, a person could win a primary with less than a majority of the votes.
Well, as we look ahead here, your quick assessment of the campaign, less than 13 months from the election, what will you be watching for?
Now, what's that old Betty Davis movie line, buckle your seatbelt, because it's going to be a bumpy ride. I think we're going to have a wonderful experience of democracy over the next 12 months.
Mordecai, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Kate.
Mordecai Lee is an urban planning professor at UW-Milwaukee and a former state lawmaker. We've been discussing Governor Scott Walker's new ad released yesterday, hinting that he will run for a third term in office as the field of Democratic challengers becomes more crowded. 8 challengers at last check. This hour was produced by Bill Martins and Nyasia Ellison. We had technical direction from executive producer Michelle Johnson. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and conversations like this, they're found on the Ideas Network. Thanks so much for listening.